You're correct.
And we're creating mobile crisis units in two other precincts in addition to Central. So I guess taking Steve's question and saying it a different way, how adaptable do you feel your program is to this new set of needs, and how adaptable is it to a citywide effort as opposed to a Central precinct-focused effort?
Well, our program does run citywide. We take referrals from all over the city. It originally started just downtown Old Town, but it has been expanded. We have a lot of crossover with the client population that we're talking about. So sometimes the mobile crisis unit will take referrals from us of people that we've tried to serve, but we're unable to do so. We just took a referral from them last week, and we just got them in Hooper this morning. So there is a shifting back and forth. There's a very similar client population that we're working with. I do think having the SCT be part of a new behavioral health unit is a great step forward for the city, because we're starting to integrate how the community and the police bureau works with people who have these co-occurring disorders, and I think that's a benefit for everyone.
Okay. Carl.
Of the 257 clients that you had, you know, a 91% non-recidivism, is that correct?
Or a 91% improvement in the recidivism rate, right?
Among the 75 graduates.
Yeah.
Yes, that was the graduates.
Among the graduates.
Mm-hmm.
Of the 257, have they stayed in the city? Do you know what's happening to them? And the second part, that's part A. Part B, how do you decide who you could help and who you can't?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we track our clients as best we can in terms of those that stay in Portland. We don't have any official tracking system. So I did a count in December. There was a council question about how many people had come through our program and how many of those were still sober. And so what I did is we had served at that time about 390 people. Of those people, and this is in the last 4 years, of those people, we'd had 102 graduate a treatment program from beginning to end, which is about an 8-month treatment program. Of those 102, 66% of them were clean and sober on that date that I did that, which was about December 15th. So the actual people who remain in recovery is quite high. So that's the answer to that question. The second question, I'm sorry, what was the other one? The criteria for being involved in our program. We have a criminality criteria. This program originally started as a crime reduction strategy. So as the chief said, most of the people who were committing most of the crime were in downtown Old Town and were, you know, identified as, you know, the top 50 people. So the people that we serve, these people are committing crimes to feed their drug addiction. What we have found is as they are referred to our program by judges, by parole officers, by police officers, is that, you know, most of them, as I said, have some level of co-occurring disorder. But for the purposes of this program, what has been the primary service would be the drug and alcohol treatment. But we also assist with the other.
Are any of the graduates able to go and really become self-supporting, self-sustaining, but having
absolutely,
you know, 9-to-5 jobs, so to speak?
Absolutely. Quite a few of them can't because they have some level of disability, mental, frequently,
right.
And so they are actually, we help them get on SSI, so they have a revenue stream that allows them to be self-sufficient. Those that can, we have quite a few people who are students, full-time students. We have quite a few people who are full-time employed, pay taxes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Process check. We are running over time here, but this is a very good discussion. So I'm okay. I just want to check with other members of the council and Carl, and we'll mess up everybody's calendars and keep going for another 30 minutes or so, if that works.
I just realized I wanted to jump back to a previous topic before I forget it, which is, and Captain Walsh, I don't want to fall into the trap of like assuming that we don't need coordination, because I know the coordination is needed, but could you elaborate a bit on like what you'll be doing day to day as opposed to what Mr. Neal will be doing?
Day to day, I talk to all the captains that are coordinating their pieces. You know, they all have jobs. This is additional work for them, and any help I could help them. You know, we have to write a couple ordinances. We have to change a lot of our directives because some of the changes we're making, especially to our force policy, you know, and Mr. Neal and I will be writing a lot of those policies. I've talked to coordinators all across the country. This agreement is very detail-oriented, but what happens during the implementation is that things come up and DOJ will say, hey, we would really like this, and they kind of add to your work plate. And just keeping people on task. It sounds easy, but it's not, because some of the timelines are very tight. And then we will be having to go out to our community care organizations and the county and try to work with all those entities, because in this agreement it's very vague, but it talks about opening a center to help the people that are in crisis, which we don't have in the city. And that's a big piece of it for a police department to have to wrangle all that. It's a lot of work.
So let's take a few more minutes to get any other questions on the table for Police Bureau or for Austin while we have them. And then I want to invite the city attorney and the auditor to come up and address their components of this. So other questions that I didn't note?
Chief, in fairness, I want to give you a chance to answer another related question, which is, in light of the fact that council has historically funded SCT, assume that we continue to do so, but it wasn't part of this agreement, and we freed up $1.8 million to spend something on something else. How would you suggest we invest that money to address the intersection of mental health crisis and law enforcement, separate and apart from police officer staff and coordination?
Well, I think, as Captain Walsh said, the creation of a crisis triage unit would assist law enforcement so that we have a place to take people in crisis rather than our emergency rooms, which I believe is not the best service to the people in crisis, and also takes up valuable, expensive bed space at our hospitals. So creating that environment where we can take people and we know that they're being successfully treated and cared for. Housing is always an issue, and I think as part of the service coordination team model, looking at moving housing maybe from drug addiction to mental health care. So you've got places like the Royal Palms that provide that type of housing for people in mental health crisis. Again, it works, and I would encourage council to look at those options and shifting maybe from our side, shifting housing resources from the people who are drug addicts to looking at housing that's more appropriate for people in a mental health crisis.
And Chief, what you've just described sounds like we're moving heavily into a domain that traditionally the county has funded. You're talking about healthcare, mental health, and the kinds of services. Traditionally, those were county-funded or county-sponsored initiatives. And that's just a sensitive subject, since this larger question of shared priorities and how we fund them. But given that we're basically broke and we're talking about taking on a responsibility that has been, is more likely historically to have been a county responsibility, are we in active conversations with the county about how to share the load on this?
Well, Sarah has been working with Multnomah County as well as all of our service providers on how to create the best system possible to address these issues. It is complicated. The mayor and I have talked about some of the overlaps in our budget where we're funding deputy DAs and we're paying for treatment and housing and the costs of ID techs in our budget for jail staff to identify people coming into the jail facility. Those are all difficult questions in a very complicated budget time, and I don't envy the conversations that you have to have with your counterparts at Multnomah County, but I think it is time to have that conversation.
Actually, there's another entity that I think we'll be talking to, which is the CCO, which will be picking up a lot of people and, you know, providing for mental health care for them. And actually, Captain Westbrook, Commissioner Fritz and I were planning to get in touch with you to talk about conversations you've had so far with the CCO, or that we should be having with the CCO about how much treatment and service they can pick up for people we now interact with who there's not that federal or state resources to help them, but there will be in January.
Mm-hmm. We will be having a comprehensive discussion with Multnomah County leadership and key management staff from the county, Joanne Fuller and others, about costs, allocation of costs between the two governments, whose capacity is available to do what. We won't resolve all those issues in one set of budgets this year between the city's budget and the county's budget, but it's my intention and Chair Kogan's intention to have that discussion very much in front of this council and that board now and beyond this budget, because we won't resolve everything this time, but we need to start. And this highlights the need for that again.
And there's opportunities here as we look at collecting better data and Austin's work with getting people on SSI, creating funding streams to pay for housing and treatment outside of city or county resources is important. And then as we move forward, looking at additional opportunities, we currently are taking money that we take from drug dealers, and we're putting it towards $100,000 a year towards service coordination team to pay for drug treatment. Again, those are areas where there's opportunities to do good on one hand from what happens and the harm that people do to our community.
Austin, do you use Central City Concerns BEST program on the SSI side, or do you have your own specialist?
We use the BEST program in Central City Concern.
So that's
and we do have a housing specialist who helps coordinate with them.
Good to know, because as we look at our housing budget, it's important to know that it who else benefits from the investments mm-hmm. we're making in things like BEST and Cash Oregon and others that help people become eligible for federal entitlements. So thank you.
Good. Other questions? Go ahead.
Catherine Westbrook has done such an amazing volume of work on this. I just wanted to get your perspective on things that we should fund or any.
Thank you, Commissioner. First of all, I just want to remind you that in the agreement we're being held accountable to people who have mental illness or perceived mental illness, which really encompasses everyone with addictions, even if they didn't have a mental illness, people who have a diagnosable mental illness, the co-occurring disorders, and frankly, just people who are having a bad day. So we're being held accountable to an incredible standard, and we need all of the care. I would ultimately, I get money's the issue here, but if it weren't, I'd love to have a program of services attached to the mental health side so that we could get people into services in the same way that we can for people who are addicted. What you're seeing here is a reflection of the county mental health system and the United States mental health system, if you will. It is completely siloed. I've been going to meetings about this since 95, and the movement was to have them not be siloed any longer, and we're going to get this co-treatment, and right? It has never really happened. So it's this constant, well, is it primarily addiction or primarily mental health? And that tension within the service providers bleeds over into the police work, because at least with our one mobile crisis unit, we're constantly trying to get people connected to the system. And that tension of, well, this isn't ours, it's theirs. It's not ours, it's theirs. Well, which means, you know, one of them, it's ours.
Yeah.
So where do we go from there? We need to have a roundtable discussion, and we need to work together, not just on budgets, but on philosophies and priorities.
And what's changed here is we're entering into a settlement of a federal claim supervised by a federal judge, right, where the defense of it's their problem is no longer at our disposal. Right. And we are legally mandated to provide the solution, even if technically, in our heart of hearts, we believe it is some other jurisdiction's responsibility. And that is a significant change in how the game is played.
Yes. Yep. And if nothing else, well, I think we're going to do some great work, because great work can be done regardless of whose responsibility it is at the end of the day. But we're also going to be able to demonstrate something that we've known in our guts for years. I think we're going to be able to cull out the data and point to the people who are in need of services. We're going to be able to say we've tried to get services on this date, and this date, and we're still left with these folks not getting services. We're waiting to see what the health care law changes brings for us. I think that'll be a huge improvement, but it will change the game, I'm hoping, I believe, when we can bring the statistics to the table and say, well, here's what we have found. And it's not just my gut talking. This is data.
What I'm hoping we can do in the next couple of months is go and talk to the CCO and say, here's all these people that will be Medicaid eligible as of January 1st. What will you be able to do for them? And for you to help us, you know, tell them, here's the things that we would like to be able to do for them. How much of that can you do?
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Okay. Other questions for this team? Anything else that you wanted to say that you didn't get a shot at? All right, thank you. And then let's ask the auditor, the city attorney, and maybe Andrew to come back up to talk about remaining issues on the DOJ and the issues here, and then the process ahead of the council for adopting the bond.
Mayor, while they're coming up, I'll just comment that we do have a lot of partners. Commissioner Fish's point is well made that the settlement is on us, but we have the Citizens Crime Commission with Suzanne Hayden helping to coordinate. We did a lot of work with the Safer PDX project.
Right.
So there's already a lot of the groundwork been done and a lot of the understanding of what the issues are. I think the Safer PDX group may convene to help figure out who does what, how, mm-hmm. when.
Yeah, good point.
Good morning, LaVon Griffin-Vallade, City Auditor. And being cognizant of time, I'm just going to say a few words and then introduce Mary Beth Baptista, who's the director of the Auditor's Independent Police Review Division. Mary Beth lived and breathed the DOJ agreement all summer and for part of the early fall, and is well-versed in both its intent and the facts of the agreement. So yesterday evening, I forwarded you and your execs essentially the rationale that we provided to the City Budget Office for the number of FTE that we requested, and I promised you copies at this meeting, so I have those to pass around, and without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Mary Beth to answer your questions, talk about the agreement.
Okay, Mary Beth. Anything you want to lead off with, and then let's talk about this gap between what the budget office has recommended and what you've requested.
Well, you know, the introduction that we heard here this afternoon where, yes, although it is true that the Department of Justice did not specifically call out the number of staff in this portion of the agreement, they absolutely mandated very specific changes that needed to happen. And mandated very short timelines in which those things needed to happen. And what was specifically negotiated with the Department of Justice, and I understand that, you know, you're all the final word on the budget, but when we discussed whether or not we could meet the demands of the settlement agreement, whether we could achieve the changes that they wanted us to achieve and the timeframes that they wanted us to achieve them, we were very specific, both internal affairs and IPR, that in order to meet those drastic time reductions in the short period of time in which they wanted us to do that, this was the staff that we needed. And so, you know, the idea that's presented in the budget that says, well, we can revisit this in a year if the resources don't end up being adequate is just frankly not acceptable to, going to be acceptable to the Department of Justice. We need to get these timelines reduced in 120 days from the effective day of the agreement. And so not being able to have the staff necessary to do that, I think, is going to put us in jeopardy of not achieving that goal.
So if I might ask the city attorney, because the same case was made by the Citizens Review Committee that they couldn't possibly do their turnaround in the 21 days that they would be asked to do it. And then the Mayor Adams's response was, well, the DOJ says try and we'll see, and if not, come back to us. So is that an option on this?
Well, Commissioner Frist, yes. I mean, that's an always an option as to anything in the Department of Justice settlement agreement. If it doesn't, if something doesn't appear to be working, yes, we have open lines of communication and we'll go revisit that with them. It's difficult for me to predict what their response to that is going to be on any particular issue. I can say I haven't looked at any of the staffing requirements or how that was determined, but what I can say is that we substantially increased the time period that was originally requested by DOJ to do the investigations and the turnaround time. And Mary Beth was there and very helpful in explaining the process to them. So I would just say my general impression is that they are very serious about making sure that these investigations are concluded within 180 days. And so, as with much in this agreement, Department of Justice is focused on performance and results. And if we don't meet those performance and results, then yes, we're going to have to sit down and revisit that with them and talk about the reasons for that.
Mary Beth, just so I'm clear about your position in this, is your position that absent the level of staffing and the funding that you deem necessary to comply, you can't comply, or is your position that with the recommended budget and staffing, you would have to cannibalize something else in order to comply?
We won't be able to comply. I mean, there is nowhere else to go for what we need. I mean, we need bodies. That's the bottom line. They want us to do twice as much in half the time. And as we just heard the police bureau say, no, or we can't, or we got close enough, is not going to be an answer that's acceptable to the Department of Justice. And so, you know, very specifically, and you know, the negotiations around this issue were intense and extensive. I mean, this was a major cornerstone of what this agreement was. The Department of Justice believed that these investigations had to be done swiftly, not just because they threw a number out and said, this is what you should be done, but they felt that because investigations weren't done in a timely manner, that the police bureau wasn't learning from their mistakes, discipline wasn't being handed out appropriately, training wasn't being adjusted, and it was part of a vicious cycle. And so it more so than, you know, the one part of that component being the 21 days for the volunteers, the major issue was that the entire investigation be done in 180 days for very valid reasons.
But I guess having the first part of our meeting today, we looked at page after page of requests for funding that the Independent Budget Office has recommended against because we don't have the available funds. So, in effect, people in bureaus will be asked to do more or continue to do their function with less funding. Mm-hmm. And I just want to understand conceptually, assuming you're right that you need the X number of bodies to meet the requirements, is this solely a matter of getting the additional funding, or does the auditor have the authority to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic and give you the funding at the cost of something else?
Well, the problem is that we're a small organization, right? There's only 9 of us at the moment. And so, you know, I mean, I understand the auditor's office is larger than that, but IPR, there's only 9 of us at the moment. So there isn't a lot of rearranging we can do in order to get this done. And frankly, we're not asking for that much more.
Mary Beth, would it be fair to say that part of the issue between you and the budget office is the budget office is saying, here's what you would need incrementally to end? You're saying that you don't have the resources now to do what you're kind of expected to do now?
Yes. I mean, I understand if we weren't under this, you know, settlement agreement in this tight timeline that, you know, we all have to take our cuts, we all have to, you know, rearrange our priorities and whatnot, but we don't have that luxury because we are under such a tight timeline to get these things accomplished.
Another question is, are you saying that you have a problem not just with what the budget office is recommending for your office, but with what they're recommending for the police bureau, for their internal affairs investigators?
Well, I hate to be in a position to talk for the police bureau because we try to maintain our independence, but the combination of both of those things is very problematic, that they underfunded them and underfunded us.
Mary Beth, in the analysis that we provided, I know that my staff worked with your staff in terms of estimating the time that it would take to do the additional analysis, and we ended up with about 2.1 FTE additional, and I believe we got that information from you in terms of hours worked, and again, that's why we ended up at sort of the 2 FTE recommendation for the investigators instead of the 2.5. Was there a portion of that that you disagreed with that would have taken that up to 2.5 FTE in terms of the workload estimates?
Well, what we presented to the budget office, I thought, clearly made our case that we needed exactly what we negotiated with the federal government. You also focused solely on the investigation piece and didn't take into consideration how the additional CRC members and the short timeline that Commissioner Fritz has talked about would have an impact on our administrative staff. That CRC is an incredibly administrative, intensive part of our work. And a half-time person in charge of now 11 members of the CRC instead of 9, with shorter timelines for the appeals, and the greater amount of investigative work that we have to do that's going to be put on our current management assistant, I don't think that that was considered in the proposal. So we definitely are looking at not only just having to do twice as much investigation in half the time, we're also looking at other parts of the agreement that has and will shift a lot of administrative work onto what is currently a part-time position.
And I know that I believe at least the auditor's office, as part of your 10% reductions, has offered up a half-time administrative position. Is the need outlined here for the additional administrative staff in addition to the current work, or is it of a concern that that position might be cut, leaving no administrative support for IPR?
I'm going to ask Sarah Landis, who is my exec and also our budget manager, to come up and answer that question. But if you're referring to the full, the full-time OSS2 position that we have offered up as a cut that's currently vacant. I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Sorry, Sarah Landis, Auditor's Office. The OSS2 position that we've offered up is in the Council Clerk's division. It's not in this division.
Okay, and so it's unrelated to IPR.
It is unrelated to IPR. We have intended to reduce the vacant OSS2 position in IPR to cover some of those changing workloads. In addition to the OSS2 cut in council contract, we've had another reduction there by half an FTE. So there is an overall reduction, but this is in no way a supplanting of that, and that plan was in place months prior to the DOJ investigation beginning.
Could you just remind us again the cost of the 0.5 FTE?
The investigator or the
the office support specialist position
support
that we're talking
position.
About. What's the additional 0.5 FTE would
I believe
cost?
It's about $36,000.
Yeah, about $36,000 a year.
So is that the principal issue we're discussing now? A $36,000 difference?
That's one of the issues, yeah.
But I want to be clear. You're also talking about the investigator halftime, yeah.
I mean, the problem with having a 0.5 investigator is that, you know, we need someone in the office 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, to be part of the intake rotation. If you don't have enough bodies to be part of the intake rotation, then that eats up time, and the time is of the essence when it comes to the cases. So to have someone that's only there Monday and Tuesday and a half day Wednesday, it reduces the amount of time that, one, they can be part of the intake rotation for people coming in the door or getting on the phone, but it also reduces the timeliness and being able to get back to witnesses in a timely manner. So you're really at a disadvantage when you have a part-time person that's not there every day.
And currently we have 2.5 investigators. We wanted to have 2.5. We wanted to have 5 full-time investigators.
Okay. Other questions?
Do you, I mean, today we're not deciding anything. We're just ventilating issues. Do you feel like you've had a chance in your written submission and in this forum to state your case adequately?
This is my first run, right? You're not.
No, you get a second run, but this is our work site. We're just making sure that the council understands what the issues are in controversy.
Yes.
We would be happy to come around and meet with each and every one of you to fully explore, because I don't think that we have had enough time here necessarily, and I would want to make sure that we have that opportunity to, if you have further questions, if there are additional pieces of information that we can provide for you that aren't obvious in our discussion here.
Could you just give us a concept of how many investigations are you currently looking into? What's your workload?
So we had 430 cases. We had approximately 430 cases last year. Community. But the issue for the Department of Justice was, and I guess that this is actually the point I haven't made that would be good to make here, that the issue with the Department of Justice agreement was that they felt that the IPR investigations were inadequate, and they were making case handling decisions based on just a portion of the information, and that they were very clear that they felt that when we dismissed a case, that we dismissed it short of the investigation that the community member deserved. They also found an issue with the standard of review that we use in force cases, meaning that they wanted to raise the standard of review in force cases, meaning in those force complaints that come in, we're going to have to increase the investigation that we do prior to a case handling decision. They also were very clear that they wanted to make sure that there wasn't as much duplication from internal affairs that there is. So they have really set out a path where we really have to step up the investigations that we do. They also were very clear in the agreement that they wanted to ensure that we could do a meaningful independent investigation. We absolutely cannot do an independent investigation right now. And you know from hearing from the community that that's a main concern. And that the auditor undertook an independent investigation of the Fresh Hour arbitration last year, and that took my assistant director out of the rotation to do case handling because we certainly couldn't take an investigator out. So that was the trickle down kind of rearranging the deck chairs that we had to do. There's an investigation that's going on currently right now that I believe IPR absolutely should have done, but we did not have the resources to do it. So, it's not just the number of cases, it's what's expected of us in those cases.
Thank you, that's helpful. How many cases do you currently have under investigation?
Well, it's February, so last year we had approximately...
at any one time, how many do you have going?
Oh, okay, so open investigations right now with our investigators, I think we're at about 35.
Very helpful. Thank you. Anything else for this team? And then, Jim, did you have anything you wanted to add on your components of this? Questions for city attorney? And then, Andrew, the process ahead is, drum roll.
We are currently scheduled to hear the bump. Council is scheduled to consider it next Wednesday. And so we would be filing the mayor's sort of proposed bump this Wednesday for next week's council session.
So that doesn't leave a great deal of time for additional discussions with folks that you've heard from today. Perhaps might hear from individual offices about whether that timeline is still acceptable. We've got to move fairly quickly. But
you would file something, but we would still have the opportunity. Big upgrade of our system, and you see it's been... very successful. But that would be the recommendation coming to council,
yes.
And the council would still have the opportunity, if it so chose, to amend and modify that at council. So I think we're operating under the usual time frame.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is, if people want additional information, make sure you get your meeting scheduled this week.
This week and proper next week.
Okay. The rookie's question, Andrew. Suppose our reaction was there's one of these items where we would prefer to go with the Bureau's recommendation rather than request rather than your recommendation. Where does that lead us? Does that mean that we have to find $172,000 somewhere else for you, or what would happen?
I didn't mention this in the overview. I should have. In total, the Budget Office recommendations increase our unrestricted general fund contingency from $75,000 to $98,000. And that's a result of a number of different changes, but predominantly the Bureau of Emergency Communications is returning about $500,000 of underspending from last year, which is offsetting the new Department of Justice costs that we recommended in the current year, and then a couple other minor things, so we add that. So that $98,000 is the amount of unrestricted contingency Council has in the current year to allocate, which is, as you know, a very, very small amount given the size of our general fund budget. Anything in addition to that, we would need to find offsets in order to pay for.
Now that's the official answer that is given to you as a rookie.
But
the unofficial answer is canceling 6 months of appointments with your office, scrubbing the numbers on your requests for your office budget, and probably a few other leaks to the press, which would not be helpful to your cause. That's the unofficial answer when you go against the IPO.
I should also point out, Tess just reminded me, that I'm talking about current year costs. To the extent you're comfortable with the current year estimates but want to increase next year's estimates, that simply has an impact on next year's shortfall. So again, what we're looking at is to authorize the ongoing costs. We've assumed in the that's actually another aggregate point that's important to make. Our city economist assumed when he did the December forecast $5.4 million of ongoing costs. We know the Bureau's request actually came down to $5.2 million as they scrubbed it. We're recommending $4.6 million. So there will be an improvement in the forecast as long as Council approves ongoing costs of anything less than $5.4 million for next year and beyond. Did that help?
So as far as this year is concerned, that we're operating on a razor's edge, and it would be if some of us said we want you to find an extra $100,000, you would ask where to find it.
Yeah.
Yes.
We don't have
the technical term that Commissioner Fish used earlier was broke.
Yeah.
But the
$100,000 in contingency constitutes decimal dust, to quote Ken Rust, a former OMF director.
But I understand the reasons for doing this next year's appropriation in the bump. There might be a rationale for on some of these requests to put them into the ongoing budget discussions as to total Bureau allocations due this year's and think continue to look at in the whole context of the different Bureau's budgets what makes sense. So rather than making this additional funding, say, yes, we might need to fund this, but let's look at all the Bureau's priorities.
Good discussion. Carl, any further comments or reactions from you to what we've heard here today? All right. Thank you very much. Thanks, everyone. And we are adjourned.
Thank you.